Jacob paused where he was. Perhaps he could see his son's appreciation, and was willing to prolong it. His voice, I called it emotional because it always vibrated with inward stress, sounded again, half questioning, half asserting. "It is my child sitting there by the well?" The question was a strange one. It sounded uncertain and absent-minded, or as though the speaker found something surprising and unfitting in the fact of one so young sitting by any well, as though the conceptions child and well did not go together in the mind. What it in truth expressed was Jacob's concern lest Joseph, whom the father saw as much younger than he actually was, might fall into the well. The boy's smile widened so that more of the separated teeth came into view. He nodded without answering, but his expression changed at Jacob's next words, which had a sterner ring. "Cover thy nakedness," he commanded. Joseph, his arms curved above his head, looked down with whimsical consternation at his body, and then quickly untied his sleeves and drew the linen garment over his shoulders. It seemed as though the old man had kept at a distance because his son was naked, for he now drew near. He leaned in earnest on the long staff he held, lifting it and setting it down at each step, for he limped, and had done so for the past 12 years. In fact, ever since a certain adventure, which had befallen him on a journey, under painful circumstances, at a time of great stress, he had halted on one thigh. The man Jebshi. Not much time had elapsed since the two last met. As usual, Joseph had taken the evening meal in his father's myrrh and musk-scented tent, together with such of his brothers as were at home. The rest were tending other flocks in the country further to the north, near a hill city and shrine overlooked by the mountains Ebal and Gerizim, and called Shechem, or Sychem, the Neck, also probably Mabara, or the Pass. Jacob had religious affiliations with the people of Shechem. True, the deity to whom they prayed was a variant of the Syrian shepherd and beautiful lord Adonis, and that Tammuz, the lovely youth whom the boar mangled, whom down in the southland they called Osiris, the sacrifice. But as early as the time of Abram and the priest-king Melchizedek, this divine personality had taken on a particular cast of thought which had endowed him with the name of El Elyon, Baal Berith, the name, that is, of the Most High God, the Lord of Hosts, the Creator and Possessor of heaven and earth. Such a conception seemed right and good to Jacob, who was accordingly inclined to see in the mangled son of Shechem the true and Most High God, the God of Abraham, and in the Shechemites, brothers in the bond of faith, particularly since oral tradition from generation to generation reported that the original wanderer, in the learned conversation with Melchizedek, the magistrate of Sodom, had called his god El Elyon, and thus put him on a par with the Baal and Adon of Melchizedek. Jacob himself, his inheritor in the faith, had years before, after his return from Mesopotamia, when he set up his camp before the city of Shechem, erected an altar to this god. Also he had sunk a well, and purchased pasture rights with good silver shekels. Later, there had arisen grievous misunderstandings between the people of Shechem and Jacob's people, with frightful consequences for the city. But peace had been restored, and relations resumed, and a part of Jacob's flocks grazed on Shechem's ground, and some of his sons and shepherds were always absent from his countenance to look after these flocks. But two of Leah's sons had partaken of the meal with their father, as well as Joseph, the raw-boned Issachar and Zebulun, who cared nothing for the calling of a shepherd, neither desired to be a husbandman, but longed with a single longing for a sailor's life. For ever since he had been at Ascalon on the sea, he thought nothing finer than such a life, and drew many a long bow about strange adventures and uncanny hybrid creatures who lived across the water to be visited by men whose life was on the seas. Human beings with the heads of bulls or lions, two-headed and two-faced men possessing at once a human countenance and that of a shepherd dog, so that they spoke and barked by turns, people with feet like sponges, and other such-like abnormalities. Then there had been Bilhah's son, the agile Naphtali, and Zilpah's two, the forthright Gad and Asher, who, as usual, had taken the best pieces for himself, while saying yea to all that was said. As for Joseph's own brother, the child Benjamin, he still lived in the women's quarters, being too young to share in a guest meal, such as this evening's supper had been. There was a man named Jebshi, who said he came from Taanach, and talked, as they ate, of the fish ponds and flocks of doves in the temple there. He had been already some days on the way, with a brick which the lord of Taanach, Ashirat Yasher, called by courtesy King, had inscribed on all four sides with messages for his brother, the prince of Gaza, named Riphath-Baal, to the effect that he wished for Riphath-Baal every pleasure in life, and that all the more important deities might work together for his welfare and that of his house and his children, but that he, Ashirat Yasher, could not send him the wood and the money, which the other, with more or less right, demanded of him, partly that he had not got it, and partly that he had a pressing need of it himself, but was sending instead, by the man Jebshi, an uncommonly efficacious clay image of his personal protectress and that of Taanach, namely, the goddess Asherah, that it might bring him blessing and help him to pass over the difficulty about the money and wood. This Jebshi, then, who wore a pointed beard and was wrapped from head to foot in colored woolens, had come to break bread with Jacob, to hear his views, and to get a night's lodgment before continuing his journey seawards. And Jacob had extended hospitality, only letting the messenger know that he was not to approach him with the image of Astarte, a female figure in trousers, crowned and veiled, holding her tiny breasts with both hands, but to keep it remote from his sight. Otherwise he had welcomed the man without prejudice, mindful of a tale that was handed down about Abraham, who had once furiously hounded a gray-haired idolater out into the wilderness, but had been rebuked by the Lord for his lack of forbearance, and fetched the foolish old man back again. Served by two slaves in freshly washed linen smocks, old Modi and young Mahalaleel, they had squatted on cushions round the carpet mat, for Jacob held fast to the custom of his fathers, and would not hear of sitting on chairs, like fashionable folk in towns who aped the manners of the great kingdoms to the west and south, and partaken of the evening meal, olives, a roasted kid, with the good bread kemach, and afterwards a compote of plums and raisins served in copper bowls, and Syrian wine in cups of colored glass. And between host and guest a discreet conversation went on, listened to by Joseph at least with all his ears, upon themes public and private, the earthly and the divine, and even branching out into the political, upon the family circumstances of the man Jebshi, and his official relation to Ashirat Yashur, the lord of the city, upon the journey he had made so far, by way of the plain of Jezreel and the upland, beginning at the pass on the watershed at Esel, which Jebshi thought to continue to the land of the Philistines on a camel which he would purchase next day in Hebron, upon the local prices of cattle and crops, upon the cult of the blossoming rod, the finger, as it was called, of Asherah of Taanach, her oracle, through which she had communicated her permission to send one of her images to be called Asherah of the Way on a journey to rejoice the heart of Riphath-Baal of Gaza, upon her feast day, which had recently been celebrated by untrammeled dancing and inordinate consumption of fish, likewise by the changing of clothes between men and women, in token of the man-woman character or double sex of Asherah, as taught by her priests. Here Jacob stroked his beard, and interposed with searching and subtle questions, as, how was the realm of Taanach now protected, its tutelary deity being gone a journey? And how was the understanding to deal with the matter of the travelling image, and the relation it bore to the goddess, and whether she did not suffer a sensible diminution of her power by this removal of some part of her essence. To which the man Jebshi had replied that it was not likely, were this the case, that Asherah's finger would have consented to the journey, and that the priests taught that the entire power of the divinity resided in each of her images, each being alike efficacious. Further, Jacob had mildly pointed out that if it were really true that Asherah was male and female, Baal and Baalat at once, mother of the gods and king of heaven, then must one reverence her not only as equal to Ishtar, whom one heard of in Shinar, and Isis, a deity of the impure Egyptians, but also as equal to Shamush, Shalim, Adu, Adon, Lama, or Damu, in short, the most high God and Lord of the world? And the conclusion one came to was that we were dealing with El Elyon, the God of Abraham, Father and Creator, whom one could not send on journeys because he was always and everywhere, and whom one could not honor in the eating of fish, but only by walking before him in purity and being reverent in his sight. But these remarks of Jacob did not meet with much understanding in the man Jebshi. Rather, the other declared that as the sun always worked out of a certain sign and appeared in the same, as it lent its light to the planets, so that each in his own way influenced the destinies of mankind, so likewise did the divine parcel itself out and transmute itself into the various godheads, among whom the god-goddess Asherah was well known to be the especial representative of the divine power in the sense of the fruitfulness of all vegetation and the annual resurrection of nature out of the bondage of the lower world, in that each year she made a blossoming stalk out of a dry one. And on such an occasion, a somewhat immoderate eating and dancing were surely in place, and even a more wholesale liberty and license bound up with the feast of the blossoming stalk. Since purity was an attribute only of the sun and the primitive undivided godhead, not at all of its terrestrial manifestations. And the reason had to make a sharp distinction between the pure and the holy, he himself being aware that there was no necessary connection between the two. Whereat Jacob, with the utmost deliberation, he had no desire to injure any one, least of all the guest upon his hearthstone and the bosom friend and messenger of a great king, in respect of the convictions implanted in him by parents and scribes, but the sun itself was but a work of El Elyon's hand. As such, God-like indeed, but not God. The understanding had to make this distinction. Indeed, it was in contravention to this fact, and would call down the anger and jealousy of the Lord, if one were to worship one or other of his works instead of himself. And the guest Jebshi had, out of his own mouth, characterized the gods of the country as idols, another name for which he, the speaker, would, out of charity and politeness, refrain from giving. And if that God, who had created the sun and the fixed and moving stars as well as the earth itself, was the highest God, so he was also the only one. And thus it would be better to have no talk of another, since one could then only characterize him with the name which Jacob had suppressed, precisely on the ground that the name and symbol highest God was to be understood and reverenced as equal to only God. Upon this point, then, whether these two ideas were the same or different, there had ensued a long discussion, of which the host could never weary, and which, had it rested with him, would have gone on the half or even the whole of the night. But Jebshi had brought the conversation round to events in the world at large, to trade and traffic, about which, as the friend and relative of a Canaanite city prince, he knew more than most, as that the plague was raging in Cyprus, which he called Alashia, and had killed off a great many men, but not all, though the ruler of the island had so reported to the pharaoh of the lower country, as an excuse for the almost total cessation of the copper tribute, that the king of the country of the Hittites, called Subilu-Liuma, could command such military strength that he threatened to overpower King Tushratta of Mitanni and take away his gods, although Tushratta was the brother-in-law of the great ruling house of Thebes, that the Kassite of Babel had begun to tremble before the priest prince of Assyria, who was striving to withdraw his power from the kingdom of the lawgiver and to found a separate state on the river Tigris, that Pharaoh had greatly enriched the priesthood of his god Amun with Syrian tribute money, and built this god a new temple with 1,000 columns and doors with money from the same source, but that the source was soon going to dry up, not only because the Bedouins were pillaging the cities there, but because the Hittite troops were coming down from the north to dispute the overlordship of the Ammonites in Canaan, and not a few of the Amorite princes were making common cause with the foreigner against Ammon. Here Jebshi had winked one eye, probably to indicate, as among friends, that Ashirat Yashur was of those who were pursuing this prudent diplomatic course. But his host's interest in the conversation had sensibly diminished, since it ceased to center around the deity. It began to languish, and they rose from the cushions. Jebshi, to make sure that no harm had come to Astarte of the Way, and then to retire, Jacob to make a round of the camp, leaning on his staff, to give an eye to the cattle buyers and the women's quarters. As for his sons, Joseph had parted from the other five at the door of the tent, though he had evidently meant to remain with them until the forthright Gad remarked, "Away with thee, little fop and harlot! We need thee not." To which Joseph, after a brief pause to order his thoughts, had responded, "Thou art like a wooden beam, Gad, over which the plain hath not passed, and like a butting goat in the flock. If I repeat thy words to our father, he will rebuke thee. If I bring them to the ears of Reuben, our brother, he will chastise thee in his righteousness. But be it as thou sayest, go ye to the right, and I will go left, or the other way round, for I love you all. But, alas, I am an abomination in your sight, and today especially, because our father gave me of the kid from his dish, and smiled upon me. Therefore be it so, that there be no cause for your anger, and ye fall not unaware into sinning. Farewell." To all which Gad listened over his shoulder with a contemptuous expression, yet curious to hear what the creature would think of to say this time. Then he made a coarse gesture and went off with the others, Joseph by himself. He had taken a pleasant little evening stroll, in so far as there could be any talk of pleasure, that is, for Gad's coarseness had cast him into a depression which his own skill at repartee only partly assuaged. He had sauntered eastward, uphill, where the slope was easiest, and soon reached the crest, which commanded a view towards the south, so that he could look down on his left into the valley and the town lying white in the moonlight, at its thick wall with four square corner towers and gates, at the columned court of the palace, and the bulk of the temple surrounded by a broad terrace. He liked to look at the town in which so many people dwelt, and from this point, too, he could have seen signs of the burial place of his people, the double cave which Abraham had solemnly bought aforetime of the Hittite man, where rested the bones of his ancestors, the Babylonian first mother and later heads of the tribe. The pediments of the stone gate towers of the double rock grave were plain to be seen at the left by the surrounding wall, and feelings of piety, whose source is death, mingled in his breast with the lively sympathy aroused there at the sight of the populous city. Then he had turned back to the well, where he washed, refreshed, and anointed himself, and then performed with the moon that somewhat decadent ritual of wooing at which his ever-anxious father had surprised him.